Welcome to the East County Magazine Live Radio Show, the voice of East County, bringing you the hottest news and coolest events from the communities of San Diego's East County. We're your community radio, representing the public interest, not special interests. Broadcasting from the heart of East County in Descanso with your host, Miriam Raftery.
This is Miriam Raftery with the East County Magazine Radio Show on KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, the network for social justice. Today, we open our show with an update on that bombing at a Palm Springs fertility clinic and what precautions our local sheriff is taking here. We have a warning from county health officials about West Nile virus detected in crows in Lemon Grove. And we'll have details on the death of a Santee inmate at Las Colinas. On Tribal Beat, we'll look back on the life and legacy of Bull Mazzetti, chairman of the Rincon Tribe and prominent advocate for Native American rights at the local, state, and national levels. Then on our Capitol Report, hear about a federal land grab as the Trump administration seeks to sell off some of our public lands. The Anzabrego Desert State Park, right here in San Diego's East County, has been named the best state park for wildflower viewing, and several other local state parks also were honored, and we'll have details on our show today. A Caltrans proposal to restrict parking on a highway in Descanso is threatening local businesses there. We'll have their story on our show today. And on Green Scene, hear about a proposed microgrid to provide clean energy resiliency for Borrego Springs. The city of El Cajon has drained its duck pond and water features. Find out why on our show today and what the future may hold for this area. California legislators will be considering a bill to standardize how to handle ballots with errors cast by voters. The city of La Mesa is looking for volunteers to serve on its boards and commissions. We'll have details on how to apply on our show today. From California News Service, hear how the Trump administration is undermining endangered species, including protections for some endangered species right here in California. We'll have a new report on preventable hospitalizations in our state, as well as access restrictions that may be coming soon to the Pacific Crest Trail, which runs through East County here in San Diego. And finally, hear about a warrior hike challenge the county is inviting hikers to participate in at Lakeside's El Capitan Park on May 24th over Memorial Day weekend. So stay tuned for today's edition of the East County Magazine Radio Show, where East County matters. A vehicle bomb outside a Palm Springs fertility clinic on Saturday, May 17th, killed one person and left four others injured. The suspect has been identified as Guy Edward Bartkus of 29 Palms. Authorities confirm that the suspect is the only person killed in the bombing. According to CBS, the suspect stated, irrationally, in writings and or recordings that he was against bringing people into the world against their will. He reportedly claimed responsibility for the bombing. U.S. Attorney General Pamela Bondi posted on social media that the federal government is investigating. She stated, "Let me be clear. The Trump administration understands that women and mothers are the heartbeat of America. Violence against a fertility clinic is unforgivable." Akil Davis, Assistant FBI Director of the Los Angeles Division, said in a press conference Saturday, "Make no mistake, this is an intentional act of terrorism." Davis called the blast one of the largest explosions ever in Southern California. San Diego Sheriff Kelly Martinez issued a statement indicating that while there are no known threats to the San Diego County region, out of an abundance of caution, sheriff's deputies will be conducting extra patrols at fertility centers located in sheriff's office jurisdiction. Sheriff Martinez urges the public here to report suspicious activity by calling 911 or contacting your local law enforcement agency. An improvised explosive device on a vehicle in the parking lot outside the American Reproductive Centers, an in vitro fertilization clinic in Palm Springs, set off a blast that could be felt a mile away. It damaged multiple buildings just steps from the area's main hospital and blocks from the downtown business district. Authorities have said they searched the suspect's home after evacuating neighboring residents in 29 Palms. In a statement, the American Reproductive Centers said no members of their team were harmed and their Palm Springs lab, including all eggs, embryos, and reproductive materials, was undamaged. "Our mission has always been to help build families, and in times like these, we are reminded of just how fragile and precious life is," the clinic statement reads. "In the face of this tragedy, we remain committed to creating hope because we believe that healing begins with community, compassion, and care. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is Miriam Raftery.
This is John Tidwell with a health alert. Two dead crows recently collected in routine monitoring from Lemon Grove tested positive for West Nile virus, prompting county environmental health officials to remind people to protect themselves from mosquitoes that can transmit the virus to people. The positive tests marked the first detections of West Nile virus in the county this year. There have been no reported human cases in San Diego County this year. However, West Nile virus remains a potentially deadly threat. County officials said people should continue to follow the county's Prevent, Protect, Report guidelines to protect themselves from mosquitoes. Those include finding and dumping out standing water around homes to keep mosquitoes from breeding. West Nile virus is mainly a bird disease, but it can be transmitted to humans by several types of mosquitoes if they feed on an infected bird and then bite people. People who become infected can suffer symptoms including headache, fever, nausea, fatigue, skin rash, or swollen glands. But in rare cases, West Nile virus can make people extremely ill and even kill them. Protecting against mosquitoes is always important in San Diego County, and here are some tips. Prevent mosquito breeding by dumping out or removing any item that can hold water, whether from rain or landscape irrigation. Those can include plant saucers, rain barrels, buckets, garbage cans, toys, old tires, and wheelbarrows. Mosquito fish, available for free by contacting the Vector Control Program, may be used to control mosquito breeding in backyard water sources such as stagnant swimming pools, ponds, fountains, and horse troughs. Protect yourself from mosquito-borne illnesses by wearing long sleeves and pants, or use insect repellent when outdoors. Make sure screens on windows and doors are in good condition and secured to keep insects out. Report increased mosquito activity, unmaintained green swimming pools, and other mosquito breeding sources, as well as dead birds, especially crows, ravens, jays, hawks, and owls. To report these hazards, call the County Vector Control Program at 858-694-2888 or email vector@sdcounty.ca.gov.
A 31-year-old woman died in a hospital on May 12th, one day after she was arrested for vehicle theft and resisting arrest. According to Lieutenant Juan Marquez with the San Diego County Sheriff's Department, sergeants at the Las Colinas facility in Santee found the woman unresponsive in her cell at 7:25 p.m. on May 12th while performing routine supervisor checks. The sergeant began CPR, activated 911, and requested help from the facility's medical staff. Emergency medical personnel from American Medical Response, AMR, Ambulance No. 5, and the Santee Fire Department assumed life-saving measures upon their arrival. AMR Ambulance transported the woman to a local hospital. Despite their efforts, the woman was pronounced deceased at the hospital at about 8:15 p.m. The Citizens Law Enforcement Review Board has been notified regarding the incident. As is the protocol for all in-custody deaths, the Sheriff's Homicide Unit responded and is investigating to ensure all aspects of this incident are examined. The cause and manner of death will be determined by the medical examiner's office. Local jail deaths have drawn scrutiny in recent years, including a state audit that found San Diego County had the highest number of in-custody deaths of any major county in California under the then-Sheriff Bill Gore. Current Sheriff Kelly Martinez has implemented many reforms and the number of jail deaths has dropped, but the deaths continue to occur, including some of preventable causes. This is the fourth in-custody death in San Diego County jails this year. 9 persons died last year, including Jose Cervantes Conejo, whose family recently filed a lawsuit against the county over his death in a Vista detention facility from injuries including a fractured skull. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is Juliet Sanders.
This is the East County Magazine Tribal Beat, bringing you news for and about our region's Native American communities.
This is John Tidwell with East County Magazine's Tribal Beat. Bo Mazzetti, chairman of the Rincon Band of Luiseno Indians for over 16 years, passed away on May 1 at age 77 after battling cancer. A leading voice for Native Americans statewide over several decades, he was a founding member and president of the Southern California Tribal Chairmen's Association, or SCTCA, also serving on the statewide Tribal Chairmen's Association. According to the SCTCA website, Mazzetti was a driving force behind the establishment of the CTCA and uniting a majority of Northern, Central, and Southern California indigenous tribal members and their Indian reservations into a unified voice. Mazzetti famously said, "As my father taught me, it is our responsibility to pave the pathway for future generations and to pursue a path that younger tribal leaders can follow, like our tribal elders did for us." He held numerous influential positions during his lifetime of service, including in federal, state, and local government, as well as tribal offices. Raised on the Rincon Reservation in Valley Center, Mazzetti graduated from Orange Glen High School in Escondido, then joined the Navy and served in the Vietnam War. He attended Laverne College on a football scholarship and later received a Bachelor of Science degree in Behavioral Sciences from Cal Polytechnic University. After college, he worked at San Diego County's Indian Affairs Office, then obtained licenses in general contracting and engineering. In 1979, he started Mazzetti & Company, a reservation-based building, engineering, and well drilling company. A strong advocate for Native American issues, he became roads officer for the U.S. Bureau of Indian Affairs and established the Reservation Transportation Authority, later serving as its executive director. He served as a Rincon Tribal Council member and vice chairman before being elected chairman in 2008, succeeding his father before him. Bo Mazzetti was re-elected for 5 consecutive terms, serving until his passing. He also served in recent years as president of the San Luis Rey Indian Water Authority, a consortium of 5 tribes that won a 50-year-long legal battle to regain tribal water rights. Chairman Mazzetti said of the landmark victory, "I am proud I can report to my elders that we have justice at last." Under his leadership, the federally recognized Rincon Band of Luiseno Indians grew in stature and influence throughout the state. The tribe owns Harrah's Resort, Southern California, using profits from this and other commercial enterprises to provide services for tribal members, including police, a tribal court, health care, economic development, environmental enforcement, and cultural programs. While prioritizing needs of tribal members, Chairman Mazzetti also championed the Rincon Tribe's generous support of community organizations and causes throughout the region. Rincon's public safety personnel respond to emergencies in neighboring communities at no cost to taxpayers. Bo Mazzetti also served on the Governor's Drought Task Force and as chief organizer of Indian Day in Sacramento. He oversaw placing tribal staff in the governor's cabinet and hiring a tribal liaison to the state's water authority, calling it shameful that there was no local memorial honoring Native American veterans. He became honorary chairman of the American India Alaska Native Veterans Memorial Committee and volunteered to help raise funds for a memorial in Riverside National Cemetery. He received many awards, including the California Indian Chamber of Commerce Warrior Award and the Anna Sandoval Leadership Award from the California Nation's Indian Gaming Association. San Diego County Sheriff Kelly Martinez calls Chairman Mazzetti a friend, mentor, and incredible leader who was committed to making a difference not only for the tribe, but for the Valley Center and San Diego communities. His impact was immeasurable. He never failed to have a smile and quick wit. His kindness and love shined brightly, she adds. From his Navy service to his tenure as Rincon chairman, Sheriff Martinez concludes, Bo sought numerous opportunities to better the lives of those around him and humanity in general. Bo's absence will be felt throughout the valley and in our hearts. He is survived by his wife, Mary, his daughter, Emily, and his son, Joseph. According to a statement from the Rincon tribe, he was comforted by his family in his final moments. Services are pending for Bo Mazzetti, who leaves behind a legacy of service to his community and to Native Americans statewide.
You're listening to KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, the network for social justice.
This is East County Magazine's Capitol Report, bringing you the latest news and newsmakers from our nation's capital.
House Republicans have approved a provision to their budget that would allow the federal government to sell off thousands of acres of public land in Nevada and Utah in an effort to boost fossil fuel production and development projects. The proposal drew bipartisan opposition, though San Diego's lone Republican representative, Daryl
Issa,
voted in favor of selling off America's public lands. While the current bill excludes California, the potential exists for future legislation to target broader land sell-offs. California has numerous national parks and other federal lands, while San Diego County has federal lands that include Cleveland National Forest, Hauser Wilderness, the Sweetwater by National Wildlife Preserve that extends east
to Jamul,
as well as Bureau of Land Management recreational properties and Cabrillo National Monument. The sale of public federal lands in the United States could potentially threaten conservation efforts, public access, and indigenous land rights. Advocates argue that transferring land to state or private ownership could promote development and reduce bureaucratic gridlock. They also argue that selling public lands will empower states and local communities to utilize resources for economic gain. House Natural Resources Committee spokesperson John Sibels, a Kansas Republican, claims that sales from these small parcels of land will generate significant federal revenue and have a broad local support, according to Politico. But critics argue that the action risks irreversible environmental damage and could restrict access to recreational spaces and sacred indigenous sites. Those lands could be lost to the public domain permanently, with no guarantee of future protection or accessibility. Senator Catherine Cortez Masto, a Democrat from Nevada, released this statement. In the dead of night, Representative Mark Amadei pushed House Republicans to move forward with an insane plan that cuts funding from water conservation and public schools across Nevada. She describes the measure as a land grab to fund Republicans' billionaire giveaway tax bill. While the bill includes some carve-outs, such as excluding national parks, it lacks clarity on criteria for sale, raising concerns among environmental groups and tribal communities about potential misuse and long-term losses. This is part of a larger push by Republican lawmakers to restrict federal control of vast public areas, especially in states like Nevada and Utah, where federal holdings dominate the landscape, Newsweek reports. Democratic lawmakers push back against the last-minute amendment and lack of transparency. Colorado Democrat Joe Neguse says Amadei bypassed some members of Nevada's delegation, who learned of the proposal only through text messages. Democrats said they didn't see the 33-page amendment before it was proposed, and that it would sell land in districts represented by Democrats. But Republicans argued at the House Natural Resources Committee markup that the bill would bring revenue to the Treasury for debt and deficit reduction, according to Newsweek. The provision could create issues for Republicans when the full package heads to the floor, as Representative Ryan Zinke, a Montana Republican, has declared public land sales to be a red line for him, according to Politico. Although the measure still faces potential obstacles within the Senate, it marks a significant shift in federal land policy, as well as the potential precursor to a large-scale divestment of public lands. The final vote was 26-17 all along party lines, with the exception of Representative Adam Gray, a California Democrat who voted yes, according to Politico. Ironically, preserving public lands is a tradition that dates back to President Theodore Roosevelt, a Republican who started America's national park system to protect treasure places for posterity more than a century ago. The extent of federal land managed by the federal government varies drastically by state. For Nevada, it's about 80%, for Utah, it's about 63%, and for California, it's about 45%. The proposed sell-off for federal formerly protected lands is the latest in a series of attacks by the Trump administration on America's public lands. Elon Musk's push to slash public spending resulted in massive layoffs of workers in national parks, forests, and other federal lands. Nearly 1,000 National Park Service workers were let go. A court order to rehire fired workers brought back many of their jobs, but parks and fire officials say it wasn't enough. The Sacramento Bee warns of serious impacts to California's national parks from the remaining cuts, including long lines, limited hours, and threats to public safety from layoffs of employees who provided everything from trash cleanup to search and rescue services. California's national parks include popular destinations such as Yosemite, Sequoia, Kings Canyon, Redwoods, Joshua Tree, Channel Islands, Death Valley, and Lassen Volcanic National Park. The Trump administration's funding cuts and the loss of federal workers include many who support wildland firefighting, making planning for the upcoming wildfire season a challenge, according to CBS News. The biggest issue they're facing is the lack of communication from the federal government as the West faces a significant wildland fire season. Washington State Forester George Geisler said at a recent press conference hosted by Democratic Senators Patty Murray from Washington and Oregon's Jeff Merkley. He added, "Without knowing what our partners are doing or not having a clear understanding of what actions are being taken, we struggle with missing the third leg of the stool that we have." Senator Merkley said Trump's budget proposal cuts forest and watershed management programs that improve forest conditions, eliminates a forest restoration program, and slashes 2,000 national forest positions, on top of the thousands who left through early retirement, buyouts, and layoffs, according to CBS News. Murray said that most of the workers might not have the title firefighter, but they all hold red cards which show they have a special training to provide essential frontline support to firefighting crews. According to Murray, around three-quarters of the Forest Service workers are trained in wildland firefighting. She adds, they provide crucial surge capacity when a crisis strikes. Among those cut are trail maintenance crews who clear paths for firefighting personnel and equipment, and biologists who conduct testing to make decisions about prescribed burns and fuel reduction planning. In California and here in San Diego County, to areas that have been hard hit by devastating wildfires in the past, the prospect of less help from the federal government during major fires is a burning cause for concern. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is Juliet Sanders.
A free press is the foundation of our democracy. KNSJ Radio is dedicated to providing nonprofit news in the public interest, not special interests. We rely on your support to continue bringing you important stories from San Diego and East County that you won't hear anywhere else. Please make a generous donation at knsj.org to sustain KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, the network for social justice.
Anza Borrego Desert State Park has been named the best California state park for wildflower viewing in a new Best of California State Parks poll released by the California State Parks Foundation. Anza Borrego, which includes a portion of San Diego's East County, also won an honorable mention for best camping location. Three other state parks in San Diego County also made the list. Torrey Pines State Beach was named Best State Park for picnicking. Palomar Mountain State Park earned honorable mentions for both picnicking and dog-friendly adventures, and Cardiff State Beach took honorable mention in the Best State Beach category. This spring, California State Parks Foundation invited its members and supporters to nominate and vote on their favorite parks across 10 categories. In just a few weeks, over 1,300 people participated. Many of the survey participants also sent in photos and their personal stories and memories about why these parks are special. Rachel Norton, Executive Director of California State Parks Foundation, says these places represent the incredible diversity of experiences we can find in our state parks, from exploring the California coast to learning about our history. With summer approaching, we hope Californians will use the Best of California State Parks poll results to get inspired to get outdoors with family and friends. Though if you are going to the Anza Borrego Desert State Park, you may want to wait until the fall and winter months when the weather is cooler. The California State Park system includes 280 state park units, over 340 miles of coastline, 970 miles of lake and river frontage, 15,000 campsites, 5,200 miles of trails, over 3,100 historic buildings, and more than 11,000 known prehistoric and historic archaeological sites. You can learn more at calparks.org.
Tammy and Brett Cooker opened their Descanso Junction restaurant in 2003 in a century-old building on State Route 79. Days later, the Cedar Fire roared through the region, destroying many homes and closing down the I-8. But the Cookers swiftly earned the community's loyalty, keeping their doors open to serve up displaced community members, stranded motorists, and firefighters. During the COVID pandemic, they weathered forced shutdowns of indoor dining, surviving winter's frigid mountain temperatures by investing in plastic bubbles for outdoor diners under oak trees out back. But now their business faces a new threat, this time from Caltrans. Citing safety concerns, the State Transportation Agency wants to eliminate the 20 perpendicular parking spaces in front of Descanso Junction and nearby businesses, replacing them with only 6 horizontal parking spots. According to Caltrans, the area is a clear recovery zone, a safety standard that affords drivers of errant vehicles the opportunity to regain control. Caltrans has also said that parking is not allowed on the shoulder of state highways except in emergencies, though people have been parking here for as long as locals can remember. The proposal first surfaced in February, drawing ire from Descanso residents and businesses impacted along State Route 79, a popular stopping place for travelers heading to or from Cuyamaca, Julian, and Mount Laguna. Brett Cooker told 10 News, an ECM news partner, "We will be out of business if they do what they're going to do." At a packed town hall meeting last week, Caltrans presented details. Skosh Coffin, a longtime resident, acknowledges safety issues, stating, "I've seen several people die out front," but she believes Caltrans' plan isn't workable and voiced fears for Descanso Junction's future, noting that the restaurant's owners have built their life on catering to the community. Caltrans continued discussions, and Cooker holds out hopes to find common ground, though he calls the situation disheartening. But Coffin has this message for Caltrans: just leave our parking alone. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ in Descanso, this is Juliet Sanders.
Now it's time for the Green Scene Report, highlighting energy, environmental, and sustainability issues in our community.
This is Miriam Raftery with a Green Scene Report. The Borrego Springs Microgrid Collaborative has submitted a grant application for funding through San Diego Gas and Electric under the California Microgrid Incentive Program, or MIP, to create a community-based microgrid to strengthen energy reliability in Borrego Springs. Senate Bill 1339, enacted in 2018, directed the California Public Utilities Commission to develop microgrid policies leading to the incentive program. This funding opportunity is a critical step in advancing a community microgrid that enhances energy reliability, resilience, and sustainability for Borrego Springs, a community of just over 3,000 residents in San Diego County, surrounded by Anza Borrego Desert State Park. The MIP was established to improve electric reliability, increase resilience in high-risk communities, and promote clean energy technologies. With Borrego Springs facing extreme heat conditions and summer temperatures often exceeding 110 degrees, this new project would supplement existing infrastructure in the area to enhance reliability and resiliency. As a remote desert town, Borrego is uniquely vulnerable to power disruptions due to geographic isolation and reliance on a single transmission line. The proposed system would integrate renewable energy sources, non-lithium long-duration energy storage, and islanding capabilities to provide consistent, reliable power to critical infrastructure and at-risk residents. The Borrego Springs Microgrid Collaborative is a partnership between the Borrego Springs Community Resource Center and T2 Borrego LLC, better known as Rams Hill Golf Club. The initiative is led by a steering committee of community stakeholders, including representatives from the Borrego Community Sponsor Group, the American Legion, the Borrego Community Resource Center, and Rams Hill. Rodney Bruce, steering committee chair of the Borrego Springs Microgrid Collaborative, says this microgrid represents a major step toward energy security for Borrego Springs, and I'm incredibly grateful to my fellow steering committee members for their time, commitment, and belief in what this could mean for our community. A dedicated community outreach committee played a key role in the application process, identifying eligible commercial and residential customers. Their work, through neighborhood canvassing, surveys, and data collection, ensured the project prioritized those who would be most vulnerable to power disruptions. The microgrid will combine solar energy, non-lithium long-duration energy storage, and smart energy management to keep essential services running. The system will power Borrego Springs Elementary School, the local medical clinic, emergency shelters, and cooling zones, ensuring those sites remain operational during power disruptions. Around 60 households with families with limited financial resources, medically vulnerable individuals, and those in remote areas prone to frequent outages will also benefit from a dependable and sustainable power source. The project's estimated cost is around $21 million. The grant seeks $14 million, which will be supplemented by contributions from private impact investment funds. SDG&E's review and final funding decision is pending. If awarded, this project will serve as a model for community-led energy resilience, aligning with California's clean energy and climate resiliency goals.
You're listening to the East County Magazine radio show on KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, bringing you public interest news for San Diego's inland region. Now, stay tuned for part two of the East County Magazine radio show.
For 48 years, El Cajon has had water features and ducks near its civic center in the heart of downtown. But now, the water features have been drained, leaving only bare, jagged rocks where once a waterfall and stream bed flowed into a duck pond. The pond is now dry and converted into a dry riverbed for the moment, City Manager Graham Mitchell told East County Magazine. The reason for the conversion, he says, is that the pump system has failed and the bed of the pond has many leaks. Repair cost is estimated at $500,000. Because the City Council directed staff to explore possible uses for that space, it does not make sense to put $500,000 of repairs into the feature, the City Manager concludes. Could some waterworks remain? Depending on how the space around the Magnolia Theater is programmed, the pond could come back, or it may become something else, says Mitchell. However, these are questions the City Council will address later. The size and scope of the city's water features have already been dramatically reduced once before. A decade ago, facing major repair costs and drought conditions, the city sharply reduced the size of its waterscape, eliminating an expansive portion of the duck pond. Some portions of the former waterways were turned into a parking lot outside the new police station and Marriott Hotel. The original waterscape, added in 1977, included expansive grassy knolls and shade trees for residents to enjoy. Former Mayor Mark Lewis even paid out of pocket to add a duck crossing sign when the city refused to fund it after a duck was struck by a vehicle near the city's duck pond, a feature Mayor Lewis pledged to retain when the East County Performing Arts Center, now the Magnolia, was remodeled. During the revamping a decade ago, concern was raised over whether ducks would be impacted, and city officials assured that the ducks would remain, and they did. After the original waterscape was scaled down, significant water features remain, including water flowing from a waterfall along Main Street, past the Magnolia Performing Arts Center toward City Hall that continued to attract ducks to delight local children, residents, and visitors until now. Robert Gare, a longtime resident of downtown El Cajon, hopes to see water features restored, at least in part, and other enhancements added. In an email to East County Magazine, he states, "The area, because it's the core of the city, should have a relaxing, quiet place to calm the soul, a place where there's plenty of deep shade with a beautiful water feature that has a large, tall fountain that creates plenty of soothing splashing sounds, which help mask the noise of traffic." Gare hopes to see any improvements include a place where there's comfortable benches to sit on and open grassy areas to lay down on, perhaps even have a picnic, as well as landscaping with flowering plants that would require minimal upkeep and watering, fast-growing trees to provide shade canopies, and a meandering pedestrian walkway. He also wants to see the downtown area, including Prescott Park on Main Street nearby, cleaned up of trash and discarded cigarettes, smoking regulations enforced, and steps taken to prevent homeless camps downtown to keep the area safe and clean for residents and visitors. He concludes, "I think it will take years, if ever, for a nice remodel of the entire area to become like it was." And he voices concerns that this may take new city leadership. The Downtown El Cajon Business Partners is working to enhance and beautify downtown in a new partnership with New City America, an urban revitalization organization. According to a public relations plan, the goal is to support property and business owners while creating a vibrant, welcoming environment for residents and businesses alike that would also include new events and more. While the plans call for necessary infrastructure to maintain landscaping, there is no mention of restoring waterscape features or the ducks that relied on this local water source. Watch for details in the near future on these collaborative revitalization plans. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is Miriam Raftery.
During every big election, tens of thousands of California voters make a mistake on their mail-in ballot and often get differing advice depending on who they ask. Now, a new bill aims to standardize the response. Assembly Bill 1072 requires the Secretary of State and county elections officials to come up with clear answers that would apply statewide. Kim Alexander with the California Voter Foundation says the problem causes widespread delays in counting.
In Orange County, in the last election, officials had to duplicate over 40,000 ballots. So there are other reasons why ballots have to be duplicated. But the primary one is the voter made a mistake filling out their ballot, indicated a different choice, and it has to be remade.
Common mistakes include accidentally filling in the wrong bubble, signing the witness signature box, or signing their spouse's envelope. If there is time, the county will often send a new ballot. Alexander says a common set of instructions should be posted on the website of the Secretary of State and every county registrar.
They are instructed typically to cross out the choice and fill out the choice that they preferred and draw an arrow to it or circle it to indicate that that is their intent. What they should not do is initial it, and sometimes voters think that's what they should do.
The outlook for the bill is good. It is currently on the consent calendar for the Assembly Appropriations Committee. For California News Service, I'm Suzanne Potter. Find our trust indicators at publicnewsservice.org.
This is Juliet Sanders with a public service announcement from the City of La Mesa. If you'd like to make a difference in your community, the City of La Mesa is recruiting volunteer members for these boards and commissions: Arts and Culture Commission, Community Parking Commission, Community Police Oversight Board, Community Service Commission, Design Review Board, Environmental Sustainability Commission, Mobility Commission, Personal Appeals Board, Planning Commission, and the Youth Advisory Commission. The application deadline is July 1st at 5:30 p.m. To apply for a board or commission, submit a completed application to the La Mesa City Clerk's Office. Applicants will be invited to interview with the City Council at a council meeting. Appointments to all boards and commissions are made by the Mayor with the approval of the City Council, except for the Planning Commission and the Community Service Commission, which are appointed by the City Council. For more information, visit cityoflamesa.us.
You're listening to KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, the network for social justice.
This is Juliet Sanders with a public service announcement from the City of La Mesa. If you'd like to make a difference in your community, the City of La Mesa is recruiting volunteer members for these boards and commissions: Arts and Culture Commission, Community Parking Commission, Community Police Oversight Board, Community Service Commission, Design Review Board, Environmental Sustainability Commission, Mobility Commission, Personal Appeals Board, Planning Commission, and the Youth Advisory Commission. The application deadline is July 1st at 5:30 p.m. To apply for a board or commission, submit a completed application to the La Mesa City Clerk's Office. Applicants will be invited to interview with the City Council at a council meeting. Appointments to all boards and commissions are made by the Mayor with the approval of the City Council, except for the Planning Commission and the Community Service Commission, which are appointed by the City Council. For more information, visit cityoflamesa.us.
This is Miriam Raftery, producer of the East County Magazine radio show. If you would like to be the media, here's your opportunity. We're looking for some more talented volunteers for our East County Magazine radio show. So if you've got radio experience or just a great voice, or if you'd like to get experience writing scripts or special reports for the East County Magazine radio show on KNSJ, we'd like to hear from you. You can call us at 619-698-7617 or send an email to editor@eastcountymagazine.org. We're your community media, bringing you news from our region that reflects the public interest, not special interests.
A new study shows that in 2022, more than 240,000 hospitalizations in California could have been prevented with proper outpatient care. Researchers say most of those patients had poorly controlled chronic conditions like diabetes, heart disease, or COPD. Rhonda Smith is executive director of the California Black Health Network, which co-sponsored the report. She says her organization helps patients learn to advocate for themselves.
I can't tell you countless stories that we hear about patients who just are not listened to and then end up being hospitalized or misdiagnosed.
The report shows that patients who rely on Medi-Cal or are Black, Native American, or English language learners are affected the most. The report finds the state could save $400 million a year if Medi-Cal members had the same rate of preventable hospitalizations as people with private insurance. Karen Savage Sangwan is with the California Pan-Ethnic Health Network, also a co-sponsor of the report.
Each preventable hospitalization has a significant cost to the system, and that's the cost that's ultimately borne by all of us, right? By all healthcare consumers. We pay for our insurance. Those rates are determined by how much money is being spent in hospitals, etc. So it comes at a cost.
The report authors suggest policymakers resist calls to cut Medicaid nationally and to eliminate coverage for undocumented people in California. They also recommend hiring more culturally and linguistically responsive primary care physicians. For California News Service, I'm Suzanne Potter. Find our trust indicators at publicnewsservice.org.
House Republicans have moved to cut off artificial intelligence regulation by the states before it can take root, advancing legislation in Congress that would make it unlawful in California to enforce more than the 20 laws passed by the legislature and signed into law last year, CalMatters reports. The moratorium, bundled into a sweeping budget reconciliation bill, also threatens 30 bills the California legislature is currently considering to regulate artificial intelligence, including one that would require reporting when an insurance company uses AI to deny health care, and another that would require the makers of AI to evaluate how the tech performs before it's used to decide on jobs, health care, or housing. The California Privacy Protection Agency sent a letter to Congress that says the moratorium could rob millions of Americans of rights they already enjoy and threatens critical privacy protections approved by California voters in 2020, such as the right to opt out of business use of automated decision-making technology and transparency about how their personal information is used. If passed, the law would stop legislative efforts in the works nationwide. Lawmakers from 45 states are or have considered nearly 600 draft bills to regulate artificial intelligence this year, according to the Transparency Coalition, a group that tracks AI policy efforts by state lawmakers and supports legislation to regulate the technology. California has passed more bills since 2016 to regulate AI than any other U.S. state, according to Stanford's 2025 AI Index report. California currently has 30 new proposals to rein in AI. Trump could complicate them. The measure was introduced by Congressman Brett Guthrie, a Republican from Kentucky, and chair of the House Energy and Commerce Committee, who said it is necessary to resolve a patchwork of state regulation. Last week, members of Congress in that House committee voted 30-24 along party lines to approve the budget bill that includes the moratorium. It will now advance to the House floor and potentially the Senate, where some observers say it faces an uphill battle against rules that limit policy changes in budget proposals. As written, the moratorium would end after 10 years, but it would have plenty of impact in the meantime, says Ben Winters, an attorney for the Consumer Federation of America. In California, he thinks the legislation could halt efforts by the Privacy Protection Agency to regulate automated decision-making, prevent enforcement of laws to protect voters from deep fakes, and short-circuit draft bills aimed at protecting people from discrimination and landlords who use AI to raise rent prices. If this bill were to pass, California couldn't protect its citizens from exactly those harms, he says. Companies and lobbyists are attempting to use Washington, D.C. to undermine California's legislative AI leadership, says State Senator Josh Becker, a Democrat from Menlo Park in the heart of Silicon Valley. Becker has authored or co-authored a number of bills regulating AI, including one signed into law that requires AI makers to provide tools to consumers so they know when generative AI is in use. Becker says if this bill were to pass, California could not protect its citizens from exactly those harms. For all the worry, the moratorium is very unlikely to pass if it reaches the U.S. Senate, according to Gus Rossi, Director of Public Policy and Strategy at Omidyar Network, which funds public interest AI projects and tracks AI regulation. That's because a federal regulation known as the Byrd Rule requires that budget reconciliation bills be related to fiscal matters, and in Rossi's reading, a 10-year moratorium on AI regulation doesn't fit that definition. But Rossi still thinks people should take it seriously, arguing that it's an attempt by House Republicans to establish a marker on what they think should be the approach to AI legislation and a sign of things to come. The action is in the states, not D.C., he says. That's why some people in D.C. are trying to stop states, particularly California, who's leading the pack. If this bill or a similar one in the future passes, Rossi expects it would get challenged in court and put a chilling effect on efforts to regulate AI by state lawmakers. It's unclear whether it's legal for the federal government to make a blanket moratorium on state regulation, adds Winters, who worked in the U.S. Department of Justice during the Biden administration. He agrees that the Byrd rule means the bill is unlikely to pass if it reaches the U.S. Senate, though Republicans may connect it to a $500 million plan to invest in AI for federal agencies and argue that it's essential to limit state regulation in order to carry out certain budget provisions. The House bill makes exceptions for states to continue enforcing some laws related to AI, such as laws that enable more use of AI or that are intended to improve government efficiency. It's reasonable to interpret one of these exceptions to mean states like California could continue enforcing privacy law if this bill is passed, said Amba Kak, coordinator of the AI Now Institute, a research and equitable AI advocacy organization. But doing so is risky, she says. We can't count on the fact that courts will see it this way, especially in the context of an otherwise sweeping moratorium with the clear intention to clamp down on AI-related enforcement. A House AI task force spent years discussing areas of bipartisan agreement and possible bills to pass to regulate AI, New York Democrat Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez said in a hearing about the moratorium. But Congress was unable to pass any of that legislation. During that time, people committed suicide from their interactions with chatbots, and kids and teens were harmed by falsely generated, sexually exploitative deep fakes. And so states decided to act to do things like force AI chatbots to protect the private information of people seeking mental health care in Utah and require that chatbots include a protocol for when someone expresses the desire to commit self-harm in New York. Ocasio-Cortez said, "Let states protect people. A moratorium is a deeply dangerous idea at this moment. All of these protections are protections that Congress refuses to take up." Congresswoman Doris Matsui, a Democrat from the Sacramento area, echoed Ocasio-Cortez at the hearing, saying, "We can't shoot ourselves in the foot by stopping the good work states have done and will continue to do." Supporters of the moratorium identify different sorts of harm if it doesn't pass. A patchwork of state regulations of AI is the fastest way to secure Chinese dominance of AI, says Jay Obernolte, a Republican from California and a co-chair of the House AI Task Force. He supports a moratorium, and if Congress fails to act, he says the people it will hurt most are entrepreneurs who can't afford to follow regulatory regimes passed by different states. The proposed moratorium is in line with efforts to prevent regulation of AI by President Donald Trump and Vice President J.D. Vance, who say such regulations will stifle innovation. A White House plan to promote growth in the AI industry and likely reduce regulation is due out by this summer. Companies like Amazon, Google, Meta, and big businesses who use AI have lobbied in Sacramento and Washington, D.C. to prevent regulation of the technology. Guthrie's proposal comes a few days after Senator Ted Cruz, a Republican from Texas, pushed for light-touch AI regulation to ensure the United States maintains AI supremacy over other nations and to, in Cruz's words, prevent needless state overregulation. The intent of Guthrie's bill, Winter believes, is to send a signal to tech companies and open up the door to possible future legislation if the budget reconciliation bill fails to pass. Winters describes the effort as saying we are supporting the AI companies more than the American people. We're seeing an explicit turn towards a deregulatory state. Federal lawmakers have steadily increased the number of bills they propose related to AI in recent years, but they have passed relatively few of them into law, according to the AI Index report. Out of more than 220 bills proposed last year, only 4 passed. By contrast, state lawmakers passed more than 130 bills to regulate AI last year. California passed 22 bills last year, more than any other state, and attempted to harmonize its rules with the European Union's AI Act and other U.S. states. The adage that states are laboratories of democracy is still true, says Scott Brennan, a co-author of the State Tech Policy Report. So shutting down their ability to try out different approaches doesn't seem like a good idea, and could undercut the federal government's ability to make better policy. Since AI is getting integrated into an ever wider range of tools, Guthrie's moratorium appears to apply widely, he added, including to social media platforms, ongoing efforts by states to protect children online, and data privacy protections that address automated decision-making. Brennan concludes, "I don't necessarily think state regulation of AI is always the best course of action. There are definitely areas, like consumer data protection, where it would be better if the federal government took the lead. But the federal government isn't taking the lead." Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is John Tidwell.
A free press is the foundation of our democracy. KNSJ Radio is dedicated to providing nonprofit news in the public interest, not special interests. We rely on your support to continue bringing you important stories from San Diego and East County that you won't hear anywhere else. Please make a generous donation at knsj.org to sustain KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, the network for social justice.
Access to the beloved Pacific Crest Trail may soon be limited due to a drop in federal grants and big layoffs proposed for federal public lands agencies. In the next 2 weeks, the Trump administration is expected to release the reduction in force targets for the National Park Service, the U.S. Forest Service, and the Bureau of Land Management. Megan Wargo with the Pacific Crest Trail Association says federal grant money dried up last October, so they've had to cancel 56 weeks of crew maintenance work on the trail.
If large sections of the trails are forced to be closed because of this lack of maintenance and care, that's devastating that folks won't be able to access their public lands because of these cuts.
Volunteers help keep the trails clear of debris and repair erosion from storm damage. The Pacific Crest Trail runs more than 2,600 miles from Mexico to Canada. It includes landscapes from Anza Borrego in the south to Sequoia, Kings Canyon, and Lake Tahoe in the Sierras, and points north. Wargo says the National Trails System Act calls for a public-private partnership to manage the national scenic trails. The Pacific Crest Trail Association normally gets between $667,000 and $1 million per year in federal funding, about a quarter of what it needs to help maintain the PCT.
Typically, that breakdown is about 25% value that's coming from the federal government, while the other 75% is coming through private donations and that volunteer service hour value.
Wargo adds that cuts to the federal workforce hobble agencies' abilities to make grants and approve volunteer projects, and that means less brush gets cleared, raising the risk of wildfires in California. For California News Service, I'm Suzanne Potter. Find our trust indicators at publicnewsservice.org.
San Diego County invites you to conquer what is arguably the toughest trail in the county this Memorial Day weekend. Trek up El Cajon Mountain in El Capitan County Preserve in Lakeside during the 10th Annual Warrior Hike Challenge on Saturday, May 24th. This adventure is designed to celebrate the physical and mental stamina that's required to hike El Capitan, which is popular among active duty military and veterans. There are several levels to this challenge. Participants can choose their own adventure, navigating the length of trail that matches their individual interest and ability. Celebration stations will be at the 1 mile and 3 mile turnaround points. Extreme hikers can push on to the summit for an 11 mile round trip trek. Women in the Wild will be leading the event kickoff with a 7 a.m. flag raising and pledge of allegiance led by a local scout troop. Park rangers will then lead hikers through a pre-hike stretch and review hiking tips for this tough trail, followed by a guided hike to the 1 mile and 3 mile turnaround points starting at 7:30 a.m. Launched in 2015, the Warrior Hike Challenges take place twice a year on Memorial Day and Veterans Day weekends. This year, participants can earn a 10th anniversary challenge coin for every hike completed in 2025. Finish both the Memorial Day weekend and Veterans Day weekend hikes and receive a champion coin. The event is open to all ages and dogs on a leash. Parks and Recreation encourages all guests to consider the demands of the challenge, which include the trail's steep inclines and lack of shade when selecting their hiking buddies. This is not an easy hike. It is rated moderate to difficult depending on how far you go. Attendees should bring ample water, that's over a gallon for those headed to the summit, and wear sturdy hiking boots. Sunscreen, sunglasses, a hat, and a walking stick or poles are also recommended. The Warrior Hike Challenge officially starts at 7 a.m. and staff will be on site until 4 p.m. to answer questions. El Capitan is located on Blue Sky Ranch Road in Lakeside. The parking area and trailhead are at the intersection of Wildcat Canyon Road and Blue Sky Ranch Road, and overflow parking is at Oasis County Preserve across the street as well as along Wildcat Canyon Road.
You're listening to KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, the network for social justice.
This is Miriam Raftery with a public health alert. County public health officials are looking for people who may have come in contact with a wild bat found at the San Diego Zoo Safari Park on May 7th at 10:45 a.m. that later tested positive for rabies. The bat was found at the base of the public elevator in the African Loop near the hot air balloon ride. There is only one public elevator in the park. A trained staff member collected the bat safely. The county public health laboratory confirmed the bat was infected with rabies. If you or anybody in your family or group were in the area of the elevator and stairs on Wednesday, May 7th, before 10:45 a.m. and you had direct contact with the bat, or you know someone who may have touched it, you are urged to contact County Public Health Services as soon as possible at 619-692-8499. Dr. Ankita Kadakia, County Interim Public Health Officer, says human rabies is usually fatal without prompt post-exposure vaccine and treatment. Rabies transmission can happen from a bat bite or if the bat's saliva comes in contact with a cut or with mucous membranes such as the eyes, nose, or mouth. Visitors who had no physical contact with the bat are not at risk for rabies. So far in 2025, the county has detected 3 rabid bats. There are many species of bats found in our county that feed on insects such as mosquitoes. Other bat species feed on nectar from plants and pollinate them in the process. You may see bats occasionally around sunset when they are most active. It's important to appreciate wildlife from a safe distance and not touch them. If you do come in direct contact with a bat, wash the affected area immediately with soap and water and get medical advice right away. Rabies is a preventable viral disease that is most often transmitted through the bite of a rabid animal. Symptoms of rabies in people can take weeks or months to develop after being exposed to a rabid animal. But once symptoms develop, rabies is almost always deadly. However, prompt post-exposure treatment after exposure to the virus will prevent the disease and save lives. This concludes today's edition of the East County Magazine Radio Show. We extend our appreciation to the Heartland Coalition, our parent nonprofit, and to KNSJ 89.1 FM, broadcasting from the heart of East County in Descanso. We also thank the musicians who provided music for our show, Laura Preble, Royalty Free Music, Frank Nora, Blues 3 Music, and Pond 5. If you would like to underwrite or sponsor the East County Magazine Radio Show, or get involved as a volunteer on our public interest news show, please contact editor@eastcountymagazine.org. We'll be back soon with another edition of the East County Magazine Radio Show.